Ruby Ryder here. Welcome to Pegging Paradise podcast number 203 on June 12th, 2018, changing the world one ass at a time. If you are a pegging aficionado, or even a hopeful pegging aficionado, and you'd like to support my efforts to offer accurate information and deconstruct the myths and misconceptions around pegging, head on over to Patreon and become a patron of my work. All patrons have access to the podcast a day early, as well as a 24/7 chat channel full of pegging practitioners from all over the world. Rewards for the various levels of support include written and audio erotica to excite and inspire. Just go to patreon.com/rubyrider or click the Support My Work button on my website. Another way to support my work is through EnticeMe.com, the little black dress of pleasure products. EnticeMe offers a carefully curated selection of luxury, body-safe, non-toxic toys for your enjoyment. Go to EnticeMe.com, #RubyRider, and for 15% off of your entire purchase, use the coupon code RIDER, that's R-Y-D-E-R. If you'd like assistance figuring out which pegging equipment is the best choice for you, I offer free equipment phone consultations for customers of EnticeMe. You will be supporting my efforts to change hearts and minds about pegging. So, hey, everybody, how's it going? Let's check in on Patreon.
Yes.
We have Adriano or Adriano. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I think I'd like to say Adriano has pledged to be a patron for $1 a month. Adriano, thank you so much. And I hope you're joining us on the chat channel. I'm not sure if you're there or not. And here's an update about some classes that are coming. I've got a couple of more webinars scheduled. Wednesday, June 13th at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday, June 24th at 11 a.m. And these times are California time, Pacific time. And then I also scheduled an in-person class, if you'd like to come to a class and meet me live, in Long Beach on June 15th at 1 p.m. And I'm going to teach both classes down there, beginning and advanced. Those webinars are just beginning level now. I'm working on the advanced level. But the in-person classes include both beginning and advanced. The beginning starts at 1 p.m. and the second starts right around 2:30, maybe a little bit after. So hope to see you at one of those. And please know that the webinars are free for the givers, also called the women, but not always. And receivers are asked for a small donation of $15, but if it would stop you from attending the webinar, please just shoot me an email at ruby@peggingparadise.com, and you'll get a ticket to get in free, no problem. Okay, let's see what we've got for letters. This first one here I got a little while ago, and I'd like to crowdsource because I am not an iPad Mac person. Here's what it says. New to the forum. Logged in on PC, but can't on iPad and phone. The login tab does not respond. Any suggestions? So I'm wondering if there's anybody out there that has an iPad and or phone that can help this person. That would be totally awesome, because I don't know what to tell them. So if you do, write in, let me know what you figured out, or let me know if it's just not working. And if that's the case, I will talk to my computer person. And I don't think that I've read this letter before. It's sounding familiar to me, but sometimes I record stuff and then I cut it out because the podcast is too long. So nonetheless, I haven't gotten any responses yet if it is the second time I've read it. So anybody out there with an iPad, iPhone that has encountered this problem, please let me know. Okay, and here's another letter. Hi there. I enjoyed today's podcast so much. My boyfriend and I haven't been able to peg yet, but not from lack of interest. Our romance got interrupted by Hurricane Harvey. He was relocated and suffered a lot of trauma. We've begun texting again, and our chats are almost exclusively about pegging. We are both crazy to move forward. Hopefully, he'll be over very soon, and we will take the next step. I have my beautiful Bella harness, and I'm constantly learning so I can be the very best partner for him. I want to give him this so much and make it the totally blissful experience he deserves. And not totally benevolent. I'm totally stoked. Never knew it's what I, too, crave, but yes, indeed. Anyway, I wanted to comment on the gentleman discussing his wife's dryness and pain post-menopause. I had been single quite a long while and only recently discovered that I love self-pleasuring. I'm not sure what that was about, but anyway, I wrote you about the chakra recently. I wanted to mention how the crystal yoni eggs and wands and dildos have cured the problem for me. I was honestly mortified when the first time we had sex I almost screamed in pain. I quickly steered him toward my ass and then mouth. Honestly, he's much more of an ass man anyway, and I'm super into ass play too, so I thought, well, I guess it will be manageable. But the thing is, I'm 16 years older than him. I'm good with it, and he seems to be too, but announcing it with that? No. Anyway, I started using yoni eggs, sleeping in them almost nightly, leaving them in until they naturally come out on their own, doing Kegels, but also just training my own muscles to tighten around the egg. Then I began to explore the wands. Holy moly, nothing like their man-made counterparts. I experimented with different crystals as well as shapes. Crystals are remarkable healers. I'm actually a certified crystal healer and Reiki master, as well as astrologer. It just made sense to me. Through my own pleasuring with crystals and gems that bring self-love, I have now had my lubrication fully return. I am tighter and have such incredible muscle control. I can't wait to squeeze around my man. The thinning at the entrance to my vagina that causes that ripping feeling? Gone. For me, the original chakra in black obsidian did the magic most. All are wonderful. The rose quartz is sweet and feels loving. Red jasper is also quite a huge fiery turn-on, but the black obsidian is ridiculous. I experienced my first G-spot orgasm complete with squirting. I never even considered that a possibility until it happened, and I was laying in a pool of sweet-smelling fluid of my own. I can't wait to show off my new skill and turn him on with it. If it turns him on half as much as it does me, I feel like a horny 17-year-old boy. I owe it all to crystal sex toys and fantasies of pegging my beautiful man. If you start slow and spend quality time in your sessions, I think it will happen for anyone. Self-love, patience, and letting nature's energy heal. I hope this helps someone. I'm going to be adding women's intimacy issues and sacred sex counseling into my metaphysical practice, going to work for myself, to try and give women confidence and a new sense of powerfulness in their bodies. I hope to be able to broach the subject of pegging, too, when the opportunities arise. Then I'll direct them to you. Love always, and thank you for the healing and education and empowerment you give to so many every day, including me. All good things, Kitty. So, wow, Kitty, this is amazing. I have seen those chakras and the yoni eggs and all of those things on Entice Me and been fascinated with them. They're such beautiful pieces of nature, I think, and that is a good way to put it. And I know that there are definitely healing properties. That's one of the things I haven't talked about on this podcast much at all, because, I mean, come on, we talk about pegging. We don't talk about too much else that doesn't intersect unless it's other kinks or relationships or stuff like that. But I absolutely have a belief that certain stones and gems do certain things. And the ones that I'm aware of that have certain effects, I will put those on when I need that effect. Like there's one that opens up the throat chakra. And if I'm feeling particularly not sure what to say, or like I'm too afraid to say things, or kind of just stopped up, I'll take that necklace and put it on. It is blue lace agate. So yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. I'm going to put some links up for everybody to take a look at. There's pictures of all the different choices of the chakras, but there's also a beautiful write-up on each one and what qualities each one offers. These stone dildos come in three different shapes. One is the slim one, then there's the regular one, and then there's one that's curved and a little bit thicker. And the yoni eggs also come in two different sizes, and I think seven or eight different kinds of stones, so they're absolutely beautiful. And I love the story that you told, Kitty, about just kind of sleeping with it and, you know, sort of training your muscles to kind of hold on to it, if you will, and I'm so glad that worked for you. The listener who wrote in some time ago about the postmenopausal issues that his wife was having is sure to hear this. So if that's something he wants to explore, there's one more piece of information that might help. Thank you so much for all the information, and I wish you the best of luck with your business. And everybody come and check these out on Entice Me. They're beautiful things. They really are. I'm looking at the curved one, man. That's a very nice looking toy. And there's something about the rigidness of a toy like that that I've discovered is really quite delightful for G-spot stuff. And I say that because of the Pure One, that stainless steel. And of course, the stainless steel is not going to have the same vibrational sort of effect on someone as the stone will. But just from that hard surface, I know that really that can be quite something to use. Okay, thank you so much for writing in, Kitty. And guess what we have now? Pegging celebration time! Hello from Charlotte. Hi, I am new to pegging. For a long time, I had been using toys on the smaller side on myself and the occasional female partner that slipped a finger into my ass. One day, out of nowhere, my wife brought it up, probably saw some of my browser history, and we have played lightly in the past. The conversation started, and before no time, we purchased our first pegging toy. It came with a small, pinky-sized one, a medium one, and a larger one. By the first night, we were already using the medium one, and the second night, which was the next night, we went to the larger one and tried multiple positions. I am addicted now, and she has totally warmed up to it and surprises me with nights we do this. I feel so good and bad at the same time. I love it and can't wait to see the adventures that come in the future. I love your site. Oh, this is so awesome. I took particular delight in the way that you phrased that. I feel so good and bad at the same time. There's really an erotic component to naughtiness, isn't there? It's just the naughty thing. It's like, ooh, I feel bad because we're doing this thing that's supposed to be taboo and we're loving it and it's feeling so good. Yeah, I totally get you on that one. Well, congratulations, you two. It sounds like your path down the pegging adventure went really smoothly. So I'm very happy about that for both of you. And it sounds like you're having a great time, really enthusiastic, and that you're addicted. Remember, make sure that she's all taken care of and you are sending her to the moon with pleasure as well. And that way, she will be much more likely to satisfy that addiction you now find that you have. Congratulations. Thanks for the post. Okay, here's my next letter. I am curious as to how popular pegging has become to the general population. Also, which countries might it be more popular than others? I really enjoy it. And introduce it to others when it seems right. Thanks. Well, this is really interesting, because right around the same time I got another letter that says this. Hi, Ruby. Survey that asks, have you or your partner ever used a strap-on during sex, which was conducted by the Vancouver-based The Georgia Strait? And then she goes on to say, 16.1% of the women and 14.8% of the men said yes. And then she goes on. Now, from these numbers, you would have to subtract strap-on use by bisexual and lesbian women, as well as impotent men. So I figure 10% of heterosexual couples have ever tried pegging. If we assume that half of those do it on a regular basis, at least once a month, then it stands to reason that at least 5% of heterosexual couples engage in pegging. Another 20% of both men and women in the same survey wanted to try it. So the future looks really promising. Presently, in many female-led relationships, pegging occurs frequently, and in some cases as frequently or even more frequently than PIV sex, and she signs it Ruth. And so I took a look at the survey. It was kind of interesting because I wanted some numbers. It's like, okay, how many people responded to this? Sure, they have percentages, but how many people really responded? And they don't ever say. The survey was done in 2011, and because this is a Vancouver-based thing, it is online, so anybody can access it online, but I'm thinking that the responses were probably more from people who live up in that area because they're the ones reading the paper about where they live. Let's see what it says about the Georgia Strait. Canada's largest urban weekly. No other city publication knows more about Vancouver than the Georgia Strait. Established as the lifestyle and entertainment weekly in Vancouver for 50 years, the Georgia Strait is an integral part of the active urban West Coast lifestyle, with over 816,000 unduplicated readers/visitors, print and website per week. So yeah, this question, have you or your partner ever used a strap-on during sex? The female responses were yes, 16.1%, no, 50.6%, no interest in trying, 12.1%, would like to try, 21.3%. And the male responses were yes, 14.8%, no, 49.1%, no interest in trying, 13%, would like to try, 23%. So I want to dive a little deeper into these responses because no interest in trying, you know, that's about the same. And I would have expected it to be either more highly represented in the men because they were a little sort of scared of the whole connotation thing. Or perhaps by the women, sort of like, well, I don't get anything out of this. I'm not really interested in it. But it seems really equal, kind of right down the line. It does. Would like to try it. 23 for the men and 21.3 for the women. So yes, I do think that this indicates a bright future for pegging. And it's already kind of happening. I can't tell you, this is like a total no segue thing, but it kind of is. I can't tell you how thrilled I was when I went to see the second Deadpool movie, and he gave another nod to pegging. Holy crap, because in the first Deadpool movie, there was the International Women's Day, right? And he's getting pegged, and there was that scene. And everybody immediately wrote me, even before I'd seen the movie, and went, whoa, did you see the Deadpool movie? And oh my God. So I knew it was going to be there. But this one, there is another nod to pegging. There is another mention of it, which I think is totally awesome. I do know that the guy that plays Deadpool, Ryan, whatever his name is, he wrote part of this movie. So he was one of the writers. And I would like to think that he wanted to put that in there. I really, really would. So that is the best information I have. Now, to answer the second question of that first person who wrote in about what countries might it be more popular than others, I'm going to flip right over to my Google Analytics, and the only measure I have for you about which countries are interested are who come to my website. That's the only measure I have for different countries. I'm going to tell you through my Google Analytics what the lineup of countries are for who comes to my website the most. Okay, so after I've explained all that, this is what I've got. Overwhelmingly, the people who access my website, peggingparadise.com, first come from the United States. Second in line is the UK. Listen to you guys. That's awesome. After that is Canada. Woohoo, Canada. And then after that is Australia. Sweet. And then after that is Germany. Followed by France, Netherlands, Spain, Italy, and India. And that's just the first 10. So that's, like I say, the only measure of how popular it is. Nobody's done any studies on pegging, which is why I'm still totally excited about that survey. I'm going to go ahead and put the link in the Linkorama again. There is a woman doing research on pegging for her dissertation. And I'll put the link in the Linkorama for that. You do have to identify as a straight male who enjoys receiving pegging from a woman to take the survey, but if you do, it would be awesome if you did so we can add to our knowledge base. And she does have an email, so if after you take the survey you'd like to know where she's going to publish the results, I'll include the email right under the link as well. Yes, we definitely need more information, but yes, those are the countries. Thank you for all of you people all over the world who are contributing to my traffic on my website. You know, I see the internationality, if you will, of it on the 24/7 chat channel through Patreon. We have people literally from all over the world. We really do. So it does tend to lend itself to 24/7 because you never know when somebody's going to be awake or asleep because you don't know where they live. So yes. Okay, so that answers that question. Thank you both for writing in with that information and that question. Here's a message I got on FetLife. I hope you're having a wonderful week, and thanks again for the inspirational content you put out there about pegging. I particularly appreciate you sharing your growth and personal stories. It makes the subject matter feel so much more intimate. Sorry you had to go through that funk recently, but as always, you dealt with it with grace and honesty, and I'm sure you are stronger and wiser for it. I wanted to share with you another podcast that made me think of you. You probably already know, quote, "Why Are People Into That?" end quote, by Tina Horn. But the obscure topic that I thought might interest you was the episode with guest Jolie Kerr. Her podcast is all about cleaning, and here she gives advice on dealing with sex stains, accidents, toys, harnesses, and more. You probably know all about keeping your expensive harness in prime condition, but I haven't heard you talk about it on the podcast, so maybe it's something you'd like to share. All the best, Sean. So I did listen to this podcast. It's actually quite a long one. It's an hour and 15 minutes. And the first like 45 minutes of it, these two ladies just have a great time talking about their experiences, their emotions around dirty and clean, sort of dirty and clean types of sexuality, if you will, sort of dirty like kinky dirty, and all kinds of really interesting stuff they share and have introspection, and it's pretty awesome. And then about the 47-minute mark, they start getting into, okay, how do you deal with stains about things, silicone lube, leather, this kind of stuff. So I'm going to post the link to that up. It's well worth a listen. And since the last podcast, when somebody said, you know, how do you take care of the leather harness? And I tried to find where I talked about it on the chat, a wonderful gentleman wrote and said, hey, you have them use Lexol. There is a cleaner and a conditioner, and it'll keep everything just fine for quality leather products. So I took the word Lexol and I put it in my blog. And sure enough, I found the podcast that I talked about it because it rang a bell. And I was pretty sure that was the product that I linked to. So it's podcast number 151, and I'm going to label that Leather Care so I have that listed in the future. And there are three products I'm going to link to. The first two are the Lexol Leather Cleaner and the Lexol Leather Conditioner, okay? But there is an additional one called Steris Staphine. From the people who know in the BDSM community who have the need to try and sanitize as best as possible leather products that may be used on a variety of different people, this is the spray that they recommend to sanitize it. Not to just clean it, but to sanitize it. Because this is the spray that's used in hospitals to kill, you know, 90-whatever% of anything you spray it on. I actually use it on my floggers and things, but I like twirl the flogger around and spray it and then run out of the room because anything that kills 90-some% of whatever's on there, I don't want to breathe it in. Nonetheless, it's a really good disinfectant type of product. And I found a deal on Amazon or eBay, I can't remember which, and I got like 6 cans of it. Otherwise, it costs a lot of money, and I found this special deal. So I have Steris Staphine forever. Steris Staphine. And Lexol is Lexol. Anyway, all those links are going to be in the Linkorama for you. And this is like, you know, the redux of leather care on peggingparadise.com. Thank you for messaging me and alerting me to that podcast about how to clean stuff. She had a lot of really good information in there, and especially one that I totally agreed with, which is, yeah, silicone lube can be awesome, but trying to get silicone lube stains out of things? Holy crap, unless you're really, really devoted to silicone lube, maybe not so much. Nonetheless, the liquid lube with only 12% silicone does not do that. I would like you all to know. So there you have it. It's a hybrid lube, and that 12% silicone is not a problem with staining or on good quality silicone toys. Okay, thanks again for sending that to me. All right, here we go to the next one. I just wanted to share an experience I had last night that might turn on some other prostate players out there with a new trick. My wife and I kicked back for a long session last night, and early on, I pull out the Lelo Sona, S-O-N-A, cruise I had bought her a few weeks ago. It gives her very quick and intense orgasms, and today being our 17th wedding anniversary, I really wanted to leave her a quivering ball of pleasure with multiple orgasms. So out of the gate, and boom, she's had number one, turns to me and says, I wonder if this would work on your prostate. The Sona Cruise is a unique little device in that it uses sound pulses for stimulation rather than vibration. Since it worked so well on her clit, we had tried it once on my cock, but it did nothing but feel weird. But we hadn't tried it on my ass yet, so what the hell? She picks a pattern to use and puts it on my taint. That's nice, I say, and relax a little more. The pulsing was fun, but I could feel it wouldn't do much more than a slight nice feeling. So she sticks the business end right to my anus, and I hit the friggin' ceiling. Wave after wave came off the Sona Cruise and hitting just the right spot. I started P-spot orgasming in about a minute or so, and I continued to quiver with a rolling internal orgasm, just as the Sona was pushing wave after wave into my body. This went on for a good 5 minutes until I cried, "No mas!" so I could have a break and catch my breath. No penetration, no lube, just pure P-spot pleasure. What an awesome way to start that session, let me tell you. I am thinking this clunky little Lilo is going to be a regular part of our sex life. I hope this doesn't sound too much like a commercial, but man, am I excited about this. If any of you have a Sona Cruise, give it a shot. I hope you find it as awesome as we do. Wow. And he signs it Aldmeister. This is great news, you know, and I'm going to stop right now and see if we carry that over Entice Me. We do carry it. How interesting. I'm reading all about it. And now I have a better visual of what you mean when you say you put it right up against your anus, because you wouldn't want to stick this thing inside you. It's not an anal-safe toy. But if you had that much reaction from just putting it against the outside of your anal sphincter, it's like, wow. Here's what it says. Sona does not use conventional vibrations. Instead, its mouth rests gently around the clitoris and emits sonic pulses for contact-free stimulation. It's an eager, fluttering sensation that resonates through the entire body of the clitoris, building to an orgasm unlike anything you've ever felt. This one-piece design keeps it watertight and simple to clean, with no extra crevices, smooth, waterproof, makes it incredibly hygienic and easy to keep clean. When it's pressed hard against your body, cruise control takes over so it won't drop its power, and you get a perfectly consistent experience. 8 pleasure settings. So, well, clearly I'm going to put the link to that, because I think your description of it is pretty amazing, and I think that there are some men out there that will absolutely want to try that. And I love when toys are versatile and can be used by either party. I really, really enjoy that. Oh, and look, there is one of them on sale. There's 3 different colors: black, which is $179, light pink, which is $179, and a hot pink, which is $125. You can get your hands on that little hot pink one for quite a discount. How convenient that Tiffany's running a sale. I swear I didn't set this up. Thank you so much for sharing that experience with us. It was delightful to read, and now there is one more possibility for pleasure. All right, let's go to the next letter. I am wondering how to deal with any exchange in control. Being a guy, I have typically, if not always, found myself being the person in control. How can I better deal with giving up that control during pegging with a partner? That, sir, is a really big question, and I think partly it's an individual question. I'll do my best to answer it from the perspective of everything I've learned about men, kind of, recently, about the, you know, needing to be in control, needing to seem invulnerable, not being encouraged to express emotions, and that kind of thing that I've been talking about on the podcast for a little while now. So given that that's the situation, the first thing that occurs to me is better deal with giving up the control during pegging with a partner is to take it in mini steps. It's quite possible that it would work just like when you want your female partner to start being a little bit more dominant with you, when some guys want that. And she's never done that before, and so she has to take it really, really slow, because it's a very unfamiliar feeling. And because society trains her not to be dominant, to be pleasing, to not hurt people's feelings, to be a caretaker and that kind of thing. So to have that dominant edge takes a while to grow into. It absolutely took time for me to grow into, and I did a lot of practicing, I did experimenting, I did some research, I talked with a friend of mine who's a phone sex operator about what to say and how to say it, and all of these were helpful to a certain degree, but in part it just took time, and basically it was like baby steps. So I would suggest baby steps for you. Maybe the first time, have her tie your legs apart or something, face down. And maybe the next time, tie the hands and legs. And maybe next time, put a blindfold on you. And you don't have to do it in this order. The blindfold might be a really good place to start, because what it tends to do, blindfolds, is to center your focus more on what you're feeling and what's touching you and how it all feels, because it takes away the visuals. So sensations tend to be magnified. So that's one thought about it, is to just do baby steps and add one thing at a time. And if any of this feels scary when you do it, that's when I think you have to kind of modulate. In other words, if it starts to feel scary that you're giving up control, then you want to pay really close attention to that and do something that makes it feel less scary. Find a way where you can totally trust the situation. Sometimes verbally, that helps. Like, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this to you, like X, Y, and Z, but I'm not going to do A, B, and C. So you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to be in control. I totally got it. That sort of thing. There's a verbal agreement that brings you some reassurance and some relaxation, hopefully. The other thing is you take a hot bath, relax a whole bunch, exercise a lot so you're really, really tired. Those things will help you just relax and let go as well in a physical way, which will then hopefully affect, at least to a lesser degree, the emotional and or sexual part of you that feels like you always need to be in control. And this can be approached really playfully too, like a game. Like, okay, this time you're not supposed to move your hands. Next time you're not supposed to say a word, unless, of course, you want a safe word and say, this is uncomfortable, I don't want to do this anymore, this is not feeling good. But to prevent you from, if you are prone to this, verbally sort of taking over and giving advice and telling her what to do or this kind of thing. If you are prone to that, then perhaps there should be a rule, even just for a specified period of time, where you cannot speak, where you are there and she's doing things to you that she knows you love, she knows you really enjoy these things, and maybe you can have hand signals like a thumbs up is a yes and a thumbs down is a no, and maybe something else is a whoa, slow it down a little bit, like a flat hand up. Figure out your own signals and things, but that's one more suggestion. I do know it just takes time. It really takes time, because if you've played one role for the longest time and all of a sudden you're trying to allow yourself to slip into a new one, allow yourself. Don't try and force it. Take time, practice, and have fun with it. And that is the best advice I can give you that comes off of my head in this moment. I really appreciate the question. It's an unusual one. And I appreciate that you recognize that this is difficult for you and you're looking for ideas. So thanks for the letter. Okay, here is my next letter. I was listening to Podcast 200, and while I agree 100% with the importance of kind touch, I was wondering about BDSM touch and how it fits into that framework. While it hasn't happened yet, I do have a desire to experience both types of touch, probably even in the same session. I do get cuddling and kind touch often, but my wife is a bit leery of spanking me. I don't know who is best suited to muse on that question, Michelle or someone else, but it does interest me. So first I have to take note here that Michelle is now like a consultant on my podcast. This is fucking awesome. It's like, you know what it reminds me of is Dan Savage's podcast, where it's like, let me bring in an expert here. Let me bring someone in that has amazing things to say, right? So I totally honor that. I did forward this message to her, but I'm recording this podcast early because I'm taking off for a wild weekend. So if I don't get anything back from her to read by the time I finish recording this, then I'm just going to include it in the next podcast or whenever she manages to get it to me. My thoughts on this, because I am quite experienced in BDSM, are that it's a very, very different thing. When you edge into wanting your partner to do impact play on you, And for the people who are not familiar with BDSM terms, impact play is a catch-all term that basically means spanking, you know, using paddles or belts or riding crops or whips or things like that, can all be sort of grouped into this category called impact play. That's what I call it when I do it. So when I have a partner who wants to do impact play with me, it requires a lot of conversation and negotiation. As a matter of fact, I did that with a young man I'm going to do an impact play scene with up at this weekend that I'm doing. And it's different when it's not like a party and like a one-time thing, and it's a relationship, because what you're asking her to do is to do something that could be pleasing to both of you, but she's not real sure yet. And it doesn't come naturally in the beginning to hit someone because they like it. This is not something that comes naturally at all. So boy, talk about baby steps. This is one of those way, way baby step things. And as you experiment, as you try things out, talk and talk and talk about it until you've like totally talked it to death practically, because what's really important is that you're both only going as fast as you want to go, that you both don't feel like you are somehow defective. And when I say both, okay, you, the letter writer, don't feel like you're defective or weird or strange or bad or anything negative, because you want to feel that impact play. You want to feel that painful sensation and mix it in a little bit and make it erotic. Nothing wrong with you for wanting that. And if, on the other side of the equation, she decides that she really likes inflicting this on you, she's not weird or bad or different either. If she decides she doesn't want to and it just makes her too uncomfortable, that's another situation where she's not weird or bad or different. It's just not her thing. I have a friend who told me that his wife tried to spank him and she just burst into tears. So it's not for everyone. It absolutely is not for everyone. I found an intense erotic edge to it that I just took and ran with. But not everyone is like that. So it is like a journey into the unknown, if you will. So when you try it, just do a little bit of it and then talk about it. And do baby steps, and then maybe do a little bit more next time. And if one partner wants it and the other is sort of not saying anything about it, it's totally okay for the one that wants it to say, hey, I really like that thing we did last time where I spanked you or you spanked me. Can we do that again? Because it so fucking turned me on. I felt like this and this and this, and I like that. Will you do that again, please? Boom. You're asking for what you want. Oh, to quote the guy from the podcast just before this one that I linked to the interview, Terry Real, the ultimate aphrodisiac in a relationship is honesty. So if you're sitting there going, wow, I would love to feel this again and I sure hope she does it, don't just sit there and go, wow, I sure hope she does it. Ask nicely, be polite, say please, tell her why you want it, tell her how it makes you feel. And vice versa, the other way too. If you want to do this to him, ask him if you can. Tell him why. Tell him how it feels. Tell him what it's like when you're doing it. So coming from the perspective of a sadist, which I absolutely identify as, I had to grow into that very, very slowly. It is a word with a ton of negative connotations. It takes a huge responsibility to decide that you are going to, in effect, take your hands and or multiple tools and basically send someone on a journey, if you will. So what I'm going to put a link to is an article that talks about how to do this. I call it the stair-step method, even though that's not what they call it. And it basically really vividly describes doing some kind of impact play and then taking some time out and letting the endorphins release and then doing a little bit more and a little bit harder because the endorphins are masking the pain and so on until you're basically doing this stair-step thing. What it results in is this huge release of endorphins, and that is basically what the article is about. Is I think it's titled something about endorphin release in something or other. So I'm going to put a link to that article because I got a lot out of it. It goes much further than I ever really even wanted to or thought about in terms of to the point where the person that is receiving the impact play can't talk and you're totally responsible for them and blah, blah, blah. But you decide where you want to stop and how far you want to go. It's just that I truly believe that when you start getting into impact play, it's an art. There is a method to it. It's not just picking something up and hitting someone. There's a warm-up. There's a finesse, if you will. And you want to keep checking in, you know? It's not just pick up something and hit somebody a whole bunch of times until they cry uncle. You know, that's not what it is. It's this delicate balance of stimulating that skin so that there's a little bit of pain, but maybe you rub your hand over it afterwards. And I personally really enjoy mixing those wires, crossing the wires. So in other words, I may have told this story before, and so excuse me if I have, but you know, so many things get repeated on this podcast now that we're on 203. I used to go to femdom parties, and there was a guy there who identified as a heavy pain bottom. He liked to be whipped. He liked far harder impact play sessions than I ever wanted to give, but we talked about doing a scene together and sending messages back and forth because there was a party coming up. And I told him I'd had a really, really stressful week. And he's like, take it out on me. Come and beat the hell out of me. And it appealed. And there was a good energy between us. So I did exactly that. And I very specifically brought only the tools I knew I could swing just about as hard as I could. And I wouldn't hurt him or cause any lasting damage. Because that is the absolute responsibility of the top. So I did this. But I, you know, part of the negotiation when you do this with someone that you're not partners with, and it should also be part of the negotiation when you do it as partners and you start to begin on that journey, is what do you want? How do you envision this? What does it look like? Because I always tell the people that I'm going to do impact play with that I like to mix pain and pleasure. So pretty much I only beat men. I have beaten some women before, but only because they really needed it and wanted it, and they couldn't find anyone else to do it, and it was like an emotional release for them. But with men, it's much more erotic for me. And when I beat them, my hands are kind of everywhere. I mean, I can do a whole bunch of strokes on the ass cheeks and then slide my fingers down on the taint and cup their balls or something. And so I was doing some aftercare, and aftercare is really, really important. Aftercare, I intend on doing a whole podcast that touches on that, or maybe not a whole podcast, but one that dives deep into the aftercare issue, because when you've had those endorphins and everything and you've had that connection with the person, it's a pretty intense thing and you need someone to just kind of be there with you and maybe hold you, maybe get you water, maybe cuddle with you, wrap you in a blanket, feed you some chocolate, that kind of thing. I particularly am big on the cuddling. So we were cuddling afterwards and I was talking to this guy and he said, you know, you're only the second woman ever to make me whimper. And I said, was I really? Tell me about it. And he said, well, the interesting thing is it wasn't whimpering with pain. It was whimpering with pleasure because you were doing something and it was really painful. And then you did something that was exquisitely pleasurable. And that's when I whimpered. So see, there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. But I believe personally, my own opinion, you can take it, throw in the trash if you don't like it, is that crossing those wires and going back and forth between the two creates this dance and this beautiful sort of edging in and out of the territory of pain. And that's what makes it erotic, is because not only are you doing erotic things and touching erotic places, but you're doing it in between the pain. And there's something about that combination that can be magical and can be really awesome. The whole concept of wanting to get hit because you think it's going to be sexy is pretty fucking weird. So be easy on yourself and just do a lot of reading about it, right? And same thing for her, the whole concept of picking something up and hitting someone because they want you to. I don't know, I tend to really eroticize men's asses. So it's like, give me something and I'll hit his ass, no problem. But any kind of hitting or spanking or what have you may be an anathema to your partner. It really depends on whether or not they can step over that line and walk down with you just to see what'll happen. So you guys need to have a long, long conversation about this so that you can figure out where you both are and have an agreement of where you want to go from there. and I wish you both the best, and please do let me know how it goes. This is always a very interesting point in a relationship when you start exploring things like this, because there are so many different little side paths to take, and it can turn out so many different ways. Because, you know what, I've been talking about it for like 10 minutes now, so clearly there's a lot to it. I appreciate the question, and I wish you the best. And if Michelle has something to add, I will absolutely include it whenever I get it. Okay, here is a message, another one I got on FetLife. I set up a pegging scene with a mistress. When the time came, it was obvious that the experience of the mistress at pegging was probably zero. Luckily, other factors prevented the scene. Now I'm left with a quandary. Do I go forward and let an inexperienced mistress peg me? As an experienced receiver of many peggings, this is something I have not encountered. That is a really good question for those of you out there who do patronize sex workers. So, it all depends on what you want out of the encounter. If you're quite sure that this mistress is really inexperienced and you have a lot of experience, you can offer in a very diplomatic and kind way to show her the ropes for a discounted rate with a number of sessions, right? You can do that. That's an option. Normally, I would not recommend asking for a discount from any sex worker. It's very offensive to sex workers. However, in this case, you are offering to show her the ropes and tell her what you know and basically train her. On the other hand, being the teacher, being the trainer might take you out of the experience that you're really seeking to have. I don't see, this is me talking, might not be you, but I don't see how I could trust somebody who didn't seem to know what they were doing very well with an activity that can be so delicate and can cause damage if it's done poorly or wrong or that kind of thing. So I'm not sure if I could relax. People can stumble into things and do just fine. But if I'm paying for something, I really want someone who knows what the hell they're doing. And if they don't, maybe I could train them and they could give me a lesser amount. That's where I was leaning on that. So it all depends on you, sir, and what you're looking for, what you might offer, and what she's up for. But trust your instincts, and if it's quite clear she doesn't know what she's doing, then go from there and decide what you need to do. Thanks for the question. So I got another question about a fuse toy popping out of the O-ring, and this is like two recently, and I've never had questions like this before. So I had this involved answer of getting this stabilizer ring and putting it behind the dildo and that kind of stuff. But somebody else piped up on one of the forums and said, you know, we bought metal O-rings. And basically this guy just went to an adult store and bought a set of metal rings that were actually being marketed as cock rings. And he used those. And because the metal doesn't stretch, as opposed to the silicone O-rings, it holds it in there perfectly tight, which I think is a fabulous solution. I think he said he paid like $15 for them at an adult store, because this is the second time I have heard of a fuse toy, and this is not a small fuse toy. This is the Wild. So this is their big diameter one popping out of a harness, and I got specific with her and said, so you put the base of the dildo behind the harness, right? And she said, I did indeed, and by the way, it felt pretty damn good in there, and I haven't even put the vibrator in yet, which was lovely and quite a vote for that incredibly designed base of the fuse singles. But what a bummer to have it pop out at any point in time. She was thinking it's because she just got so turned on doing the whole thing that everything got really juicy, basically, which may be part of it, absolutely. So, metal O-rings. Try that, everybody. Cheap solution. Woohoo! Okay, I have one more question. Okay, this is from a lovely young man who wrote me on FetLife, and I kind of unfortunately had to brush him off because he just wanted to chat. He was so excited to find someone who was so enthusiastic and into pegging that he just wanted to talk with me, and he lives far away, and I told him that this is not something I have time for, sadly. I really do wish that I had time to chat with every guy who was thrilled to find a woman who would talk openly about pegging and answer all of their questions. And perhaps when Patreon is, going through the roof, I will have time to do that with all of you gentlemen who want to talk to me. But until then, chatting doesn't pay the bills. Anyway, he was quite nice and said, is there any limit to how big a man could potentially take strap-on-wise? He said, I've been very curious about size. And so basically here's the deal. You know, the human body has limits. You cannot put anything up your ass. This is pretty clear. There are absolutely limits. When I teach my class, my particular limit is about the same size as someone's hand. It is actually the dildo called the Hoss, which is 2.75 inches in diameter on the head, and then the shaft is 2.5 inches. And the length is 11, I believe, 11 even. Now, the length you have to be more careful with. Well, you have to be careful with the whole thing. But the point is that, yes, you can work yourself up to this. You can work yourself up to taking quite a wide toy. Wider than that, a lot of people have. But that's my particular limit, which is roughly the size of a hand if you do fisting, okay? But do use caution when you go to deep insertions, because then you're coming up against that second sphincter at the end of the rectal canal. Now, one of the other things that you said, because we chatted just a little bit more, was, may I ask how big you've personally been able to peg a guy with? My first time with a toy, I was able to take an 8-inch one quite well and with ease, so I'm curious if that's normal, I guess. Okay, so first of all, I would caution you not to make it a competition. Please just pay attention to your body and what feels good. You may be someone who loves girth. You may be someone who enjoys length. The only thing you mention here is length, which is 8 inches. Typically, 8-inch dildos are about 2 inches in diameter. You know, less than that is rare. So you probably had a good, decent-sized one in there. Is it normal? There really is no normal. Is it unusual that you could take it for the first time? Yeah. But it's not a badge of honor. It's a thing that your body did, and I hope it felt amazing. I think it probably did, because you sound pretty excited about it. So I sent this guy to my Patreon page and said, hey, you know, we've got a 24/7 chat channel, and if you join for like $1 a month, you can talk to all of these people who were so excited about pegging. And he tried to go over there, which leads me to my last subject. But before I close this one, I do want to say that there is a portion of my webinar that I teach about safety and about the limits of size. And again, I have set my own boundaries, and the way that you phrased that, how big I've personally been able to peg a guy with, my goal is not to peg a guy with as big a dildo as I can. That is not what really turns me on. What turns me on is being able to give him as much pleasure as possible. And if that is fisting him, which I've done twice, and my hand is just about exactly the same size as this enormous dildo from Tantus called the Hoss, which I will put a link to in the linkorama. And I don't think that you've listened to my podcast before, young man. So the linkorama is just where the blog is posted on my website. Down below, I put links to everything I talk about. So anyway, it's not a competition. I know some of you guys really get into the, hey, I can take this and I can take that. I hear echoes of male competitiveness here. And what I really want to encourage you to do is to figure out what's best for you. You may turn out to be a guy that loves really long toys. You may turn out to be a guy that loves really thick toys. You may turn out to be a guy that loves both. You may turn out to be a guy that really likes to be fisted. But you're not better than the guy who stays with the 1-inch dildo for the rest of his life and gets amazing orgasms from it and loves pegging. You're just different. So there you go. So anyway, thank you for that question. I apologize, I had absolutely no time to answer it, but I hope this helps. And please do consider taking my webinar. I'm sorry I sent you to Patreon and they suspended my account for a little while. This is the last subject. So he was a little puzzled and wrote me back and said, so, hey, the link to the page you sent me to wouldn't open and said it was under review. So here is a quick recap of what happened with Patreon. As you may recall, a year ago, right after Masturbation Month of May, Patreon kind of called me on a few of the things that I'd posted up there, and I got a little wild with my posting, and I believe the three things that they very specifically asked me to take down pictures of were pictures of masturbation, pictures of penetration, and this third one just made me laugh, because it was kind of gender sexist, whatever. Vagina play. Okay, they said nothing about penis play. They said vagina play, whatever the fuck that is. That sounds like masturbation to me. Nonetheless, I followed the rules because they make the rules, and I took those pictures down, and I put links to them because I host them over at my website anyway. So I just put links to them. The pictures are still there. There's just a little link that says sexy picture for you, right? And I thought we're all good. So in between then and now, Patreon introduced this cool feature where you can say, hey, I want this post to not be available for public consumption for X amount of days, and you can fill in the number of days and everything. And I thought this is perfect for my podcast because here I am giving the podcast to my Patreons a day early, and then it will become a public post, so anybody who comes to my Patreon page can actually see it. And I thought that was awesome, and I had pictures in there that while they showed nudity, they showed no penetration, they showed no masturbation, and they showed no vagina play. It just makes me laugh, that phrase. And I went back and I read these letters, okay? Because apparently, I read their community guidelines now, and there is a new couple of sentences in there that were not there before. And if they were there, nobody made me adhere to them until now, which I find kind of unusual or unlikely, is that's the word I want. So let me read those two sentences to you. We also require that all public content on your page be appropriate for all audiences. Content with mature themes must be marked as a patron-only post. Okay, I never remember reading that before. So, on a day where I am trying to get this podcast done, I'm trying to pack for going on this wild weekend with this awesome guy, I had to take an hour out of my day, and I changed 65 posts from public to patron-only. Took about an hour of my time. And there you have it. I asked them to review it, and I got an auto response back saying they are a little bit overwhelmed right now. I suspect what happened is they put that rule in there, and then they sort of mass enforced it and tagged a lot of the pages that were in violation of the rule. And, you know, please don't get mad at Patreon, everybody. They're just trying to cover their asses after the Sesta Fosta thing, and trying to make sure that they don't get themselves in trouble. And they make the rules, and they've actually been really fair with me. They didn't tell me, they didn't kick me off of Patreon, they didn't do anything weird. They just said, hey, you're suspended, you need to attend to this, which I did. Now I'm waiting for them to put it back up. So yes, that is the story of what happened on Patreon. I think the only thing that I'm going to put on Patreon as a public post is some reviews I found. Those reviews that I found from that podcast downloader app, I believe they were transferred over from iTunes. I think they're iTunes reviews. But that was from the last podcast where the guy said, hey, where do I find the whole list of your podcasts, all of them, from a podcast downloader that works with an Android phone? And I had that on my last podcast, and I gave him that information. Well, while I was there, I think I mentioned I found these reviews, and I read them, and they were freaking amazing. They made me cry, and they made me feel really appreciated, and more importantly than any of that, I mean, that's heartwarming, that's amazing, and it makes me feel really good. But it also lets me know that I'm doing what I need to be doing in this world. I am on the path. I'm doing the right thing. So I think I may copy some of those and put them down for public posts on my Patreon page so that there's something there for people who show up and want to check out and see what Patreon's all about. It's sort of like, hey, welcome to my Patreon page, and yes, I'd like you to give me some money every month, but I can't show you any of what I post here. Just a little bit irritated, can you tell? Anyway, I worked with it, I worked through it, and I'm going to finish this podcast. It will post on time while I am off having a wild, kinky weekend, which I'm sure I will have lots of stories to tell when I return. I hope you all are enjoying this podcast. It's going to go up early Monday morning for my patrons, and then early Tuesday morning for general consumption. So that is pretty much it. You can find my work at peggingparadise.com, where I have my blog, my podcast, my erotica, and the forum. You can also go to pegging101.com, where I have informational pegging articles only with no kink. My podcasts are available through a variety of podcast downloader apps, which you can find a sampling of under the tab Follow on my website for both Android and iPhones. You can also stream my podcast directly from my website if you like. The Follow tab has links for you to subscribe to my blog, follow me on Twitter, and check out my Facebook page. And if you order some of those amazing toys from enticeme.com, please remember to use the coupon code WRITER for 15% off of your purchase. Send your questions to Ruby at peggingparadise.com. No question is too massive, too minimal, or too mind-blowing. Many listeners are going to learn along with you, and a lot of times so do I. So don't be shy. Throw those questions in my mailbox or call me at 805-500-6544. That's 805-500-6544. Thank you for downloading and listening, everybody. You rock. Happy pegging.